Supreme Court of the State of New Mexico.
Please be seated. Good morning, everyone. We are here on our... Who's ringing? We are here on R&R LLC versus New Mexico Department of Transportation, S1SC 40720. Mr. Carrillo, it looks to me like you have reserved 8 minutes for rebuttal. Is that correct?
That's correct, Chief Justice. Thank you.
Please enter your appearance and you can begin.
Raul Armando Carrillo, Las Cruces, New Mexico, appearing today with Deborah DeMack, Assistant General Counsel for the New Mexico Department of Transportation, on behalf of the defendant. May it please the court. To benefit the public, the legislature grants a special form of title, a conditional fee to a right-of-way for every state highway pursuant to NMSA 1978, section 67-2-5. The public interest in these rights-of-way cannot be divested without the state's express consent, so long as the state uses the rights-of-way for public purposes, i.e. the condition. The respondent prevailed below when the lower courts analyzed this case as a prescriptive easement matter or a prescriptive easement dispute between private party owners, leading to a wrong analysis and an erroneous factual analysis. This matter involves the state's statutory right to land attached and adjacent to state and federally designated highways, US 54 and US 70, built and maintained for the traveling public in southern New Mexico, and which serve several critical federal facilities, including Fort Bliss, the White Sands Missile Range, the Holloman Air Force Base, the McGregor Range, and other related installations. As supported by the record in the trial court, the state holds and has held, since at least 1955, a statutory and equitable title to right-of-way on both sides of each highway, as testified to by Michael Smelker, and as supported by an attorney general opinion, opinion number 54-58. The state holds that conditional fee interest generated by statute since 1978. The statute became effective in 1979. That's 67-2-5 at issue here. The state has never consented to giving up its interest in the right-of-way, and none of these facts has ever changed.
Mr. Carrillo, let me ask you, how would a prospective purchaser, anyone who's located along Highway 54, Highway 70, how would they know what they're buying that's usable land on your argument?
They would go to the state. They would ask for what's in the record as State's Exhibit Number 10. It is a title report. These can be generated at local offices and in Santa Fe.
Well, a title report presumes that it's filed for record in the county clerk's records, correct?
It's filed for record with the state offices and generally in the office of the state engineer as well.
So if they did a title search with the county clerk, they should find the information that you're referring to?
Not necessarily with the county clerk, because as you can see, the title report is voluminous. So these are kept in a central location for the state, but sometimes distributed various offices.
Sure, title reports are reports that gather public documents and put them into a report and say, this is what the property you're talking about looks like. Here are the easements. Here's the chain of title showing who's owned it in the past, showing what burdens are associated with the property. And so if you do a title search with the county clerk, should you not find the information that you're referring to?
If you do a title search with the county clerk, you will find records of ownership that transfer from owner to owner, but you won't necessarily find, and in this case, no one was able to find a record of ownership of right-of-way for the state because that's not the way they're kept. That's not the system. So under 67-2-5, the right-of-way attaches immediately to the state. Records of that right-of-way are kept in the title report and on maps. So you would go to a map that's kept by the local engineer, just like the maps that are attached to Mr. Smelker's affidavit in support of the response to the motion for summary judgment. It's a great question, and it makes life difficult sometimes for unsophisticated purchasers. But sophisticated purchasers, like the developer in this case, and the developer in this case's expert witness, located the rights-of-way claims by the state, and those are referred to in Exhibit Number 40, which was admitted by the trial court.
And Exhibit Number 40 shows the actual width of the highway?
It does not, because as I understand, the width of the highway is contested, but I can tell you exactly what Exhibit 40 says. It is an appraisal report that claims to be for more than 2 acres of property, which is more than what R&R bought, but that was ordered to be performed by R&R by the appraiser with the assumption that land was clear. It contains a property description, and what it says on page 17 of Exhibit 40 is, per the provided survey plat completed by Alamotero Land Survey, there are no easements or encroaches over the subject land. However, the preliminary ALTA survey completed by Centerline Engineering and Consulting for the potential purchase of the property by Maverick, Inc., shows wide rights of way along the three bounding streets that surround the property. Regardless, there is a dispute of the existence of these easements, and as requested, this appraisal is based on the hypothetical condition that the property is vacant and unencumbered.
Did the ALTA survey show the width of the highway?
The ALTA survey shows the existence of rights of way.
Does it show the width of the
I do not know. I'm sorry, I can't answer that question. It wasn't transmitted by the district court because the ALTA survey itself wasn't made a part of the record. So all we have is Exhibit 40, which is the potential purchaser's expert saying, I've looked at the ALTA survey, and the ALTA survey says there are wide state rights of way here, which is consistent with Mr. Smelker's affidavit in support of the motion for summary judgment. And what Mr. Smelker said, and is admitted by opposing counsel, is we own about 90% of that inner triangle that you're talking about, and the state have rights of way rights there. There's something very deceptive about this case in the record, and I choose that word very carefully. What Mr. Schein and R&R actually purchased was this. What Mr. Schein and R&R attempted to sell to Maverick was this. The difference between this triangle and this triangle is the 100-foot right-of-way that bounds the triangle on every side and shrinks the property. Exhibit number 10 to the trial, which was admitted without objection on the second day of trial during the testimony of Adrienne Montoya, shows that what R&R purchased subsequent to ownership by a Mr. Glover, subsequent to ownership by Mr. Ritchie, was actually half an acre of property. Exhibit 40, submitted to the court, claims an interest in 2.016 acres.
I'm really confused about why you would not introduce the ALTA survey into evidence if that's the evidence of the width of the highway.
I didn't have the ALTA survey, but I do have my own evidence of the width of the highway. Again, the Smelker affidavit attaches two maps, and the maps very clearly show the 100-foot right-of-way. Page one of the first map in the lower left-hand corner. I'm sorry, I've had cataract surgery, so it's hard for me to see. But if someone were to take a magnifying glass and look at it, it shows 100 feet in three different places in the lower left-hand corner of the first photograph that's attached. Now, there are many maps in the record proper, including maps that appear at Record Proper 360 and the map that appears at page 46 of Exhibit 10, again, the title report, and they all show 100-foot right-of-way from the center line on both sides of the road. So I didn't need to submit the ALTA survey. The ALTA survey actually just confirms what Mr. Smelker had already told me, that the right-of-way was in existence, it was known to the state, and it's 100 feet in width. Now, I have to tell you, Chief Justice, that that is a presumption that the state makes based on AASHTO standards and other standards, because Mr. Smelker testifies in accordance with New Mexico law at other places in the record that right-of-ways change depending on geography, depending on the use of the highway, depending on the speed at which the highway is traveled, and depending on what is intended to be accomplished on the highway. At this triangle, the right-of-way is carried in state records as 100 feet on either side of the center line. That doesn't mean on all of US 70 and on all of 54, the right-of-way is always 100 feet, but it is here.
So none of these maps were filed with the county clerk. They were in the Department of Transportation's records?
As I understand, they were in the Department of Transportation's records at individual offices and in the office in Santa Fe. And as I mentioned, they can be accessed through a special office created by the state called the Bureau of Right-of-Ways.
Mm-hmm.
So you can call them and say, would you please give me all of the maps that indicate state right-of-way in this area? And it's fascinating to me that R&R claims that they didn't know about this right-of-way, but the purchaser found the right-of-way immediately, exercising due diligence. What's happened here is of some concern, I think. Mr. Schein.
So they found there was a map showing a claim to the right-of-way.
Yes, it remains in dispute according to Exhibit 40.
So, but that doesn't establish the legal right to the right-of-way.
It does not establish the width, Your Honor, but the legal right is established in 67-2-5.
Well, I'm saying the maps, when you get the maps, this all it is as an assertion, we have this right-of-way.
It shows you the right-of-way that the Department of Transportation believes it holds as a result of the statute.
How do we know that's true? I mean, I'm looking at these maps. There's approval blocks, and none of them are filled out. They're all blank.
I'm not exactly sure which map you're looking at.
I'm looking at the maps attached to Mr. Smoker's affidavit that was attached to your response in opposition to plaintiff's motion for partial summary judgment.
I think Mr. Smelker testifies in his affidavit that these are the actual state records, and I'm turning to those maps now, and he incorporates the maps in his testimony. So I'm looking at the one that says Village of Tularosa.
Mm-hmm.
It's the very first page, and where I've highlighted in yellow, it shows the 100-foot right-of-way on each side of the triangle.
Where I'm looking at the second one,
okay.
Under that one, Village of Tularosa, there is a approval block for apparently the highway engineer and also for the Department of Commerce Bureau of Public Roads, and they're both blank.
I think under those circumstances, I haven't noted that, and I still don't see it, again, because my eyes are terrible. But I think what we have to accept is that Mr. Smelker, when he incorporated these as the actual records of the state in his affidavit, he created the necessary issue of material fact that should have warranted this matter going to trial.
If the underlying document isn't properly executed, you can't whitewash that through an expert after the fact and say, now this is a clear demonstration.
I absolutely agree. And I think one of the ways that we address that is that Mr. Smelker has personal knowledge of this roadway. He doesn't live up here in Santa Fe. He lives down in Roswell. And he's the district engineer, was at the time responsible for maintaining that right-of-way.
Well, I mean, my concern is when you have a property owner, someone who's interested or investigating the purchase of a property, and they get a map that's not executed, they don't have Mr. Smelker's affidavit to go with it. They're relying on public documents, and we have an unexecuted public document.
There's no record, Chief Justice, that anybody from R&R called up to Santa Fe and said, may I speak with the right-of-way department or may I speak with the Bureau of Right-of-Ways?
Well,
because I'm having a hard time finding this, even though my expert, Centerline, has found it. I would like to be able to
see it. What they're finding, because it's unexecuted, isn't actual notice.
This particular document is unexecuted, but there are other maps.
This is what was in the record.
Mm-hmm. There are other maps that are in the record, the 2012 map and the 2018 map, that also show the exact same right-of-way. I think there are a total of 10 or 12 maps, actually, in the record. So I appreciate that you're focusing on one, which I can't dispute with you, doesn't have a check in the box, but I know the others.
For summary judgment. This is the one that the court was looking at to determine whether summary judgment was appropriate or not. And so I'm concerned that under our law, you have constructive notice if it's in the public record, but we have an unexecuted map that may or may not have been in the public record for the R&R to look at. How do we treat that?
I appreciate and understand the concern. I think you take Mr. Smelker's deposition testimony and say, is this the only record? Is it the official record? Is it the map that you have to have? Is it the map that you act upon? Is it the map that you would use at trial? And where does that come from? And if you look at the title report, you'll see that that map is generated from even earlier maps. And again, if we look at the title report, we'll see that there's a reference to a federal project number that has even earlier maps.
When was the title report proffered to the court?
The title report was proffered to the court during the trial.
So post-summary judgment?
It was, I believe, post-summary judgment. Yes, ma'am. And so at the trial, Adrienne Montoya was on the witness stand, and the colloquy begins, I actually copied it for you, at page 129, day two of the bench trial. The court took Ms. Montoya's testimony first, and about four pages into the testimony, the following conversation occurs between the court, Mr. Wheeler, and I. And I indicate the first document that, I'm sorry, Ms. Montoya says the first document we should look at would be page number 7. The court says, excuse me, Mr. Carrillo, it has not been entered into evidence, so of course I cannot look at it until I apologized and said this was previously provided, it has been admitted, it's on the defendant's witness list, and we now move the admission. And Mr. Wheeler indicated that he had no objection to the admission of the document. So he had seen it long before the trial. It wasn't a surprise on the trial court or on anybody else. So I believe that Mr. Wheeler had notice at the time of the trial, as did all of his witnesses. Now, Mr. Wheeler, to be fair, did object later on other grounds. He said, you're trying to backdoor in a way to talk about a right-of-way. If you continue through a review of that section of the transcript, what you'll find out is that Ms. Montoya was testifying about the actual amount of land purchased, and that's what that title report goes to. Not only are there maps that describe the right-of-way, but she concludes that what was actually purchased was half an acre, not the 2.016 acres that's discussed on the front page of the appraisal report.
So as long as we're... go back to Justice Vigil's question. I understand conversation over the map. But you're asserting Highway Department's interest in this land through 6725, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. What is it in the record to dispute summary judgment other than the map to show state of New Mexico continuously used by or open to use by the public as such for a period of 1 year? I think that's where this whole prescriptive easement confusion comes in, because it sounds like prescriptive easement. I have read this statute in my own practice at the Attorney General's office to mean if a public is using the road out in this huge state and they use it for a highway for more than a year, it's a highway. That doesn't seem what we have here. What do you have to rebut summary judgment?
What I had at the time of the summary judgment motion was Mr. Smelker's affidavit, his description of the right-of-way under 6725, his attachment of the maps that appear in support of his affidavit.
Okay.
And I have the existing record in Santa Fe and at various district offices of the title report that is Exhibit 40.
But you didn't, provide that to the court at the time of the summary judgment hearing.
No.
It was that's out of bounds when we're focusing on what the court had before it. Right. For purposes of the motion for summary judgment.
And I'm sorry, I need to clarify that. It existed in the state's records, and I think there's an obligation by the purchaser of property to discover and look for that in the state records. And the other thing I have...
There's maintenance records. There's all sorts of records showing the highway department used it as a highway. That didn't exist here.
I understand the frustration, Justice Thompson, and I'm equally frustrated because... I think if I were a developer, and I'm not, and I bought a piece of property in 2011 and held it for 10 years and then decided to sell it, I would try to figure out what it is that I owned. And in 2011, when R&R purchased this property, they had the next 10 years to figure out if there was any burden on the property whatsoever. What's also remarkable about Exhibit 40 is it shows on its face the burdens on the property. There are pictures that show signage for the State Highway Department that appear in that report. I see that my time is almost over, but I want to answer your question fully. The last piece that we don't have at the time of summary judgment is any assertion by the plaintiff that the state does not have a right-of-way. What the plaintiff asserts, going back to this confusion over the use of language, is the plaintiff asserts the state doesn't have a prescriptive easement. I read the opinions in McFarland and Luevano and Trigg and looked back at those opinions. I don't think that that's what the state has to prove, and this is not a prescriptive easement over private property where the state is asserting that type of interest. This is a public prescriptive easement that exists by virtue of the statute, not by virtue of use.
But your only evidence at summary judgment is a map. It's not use. That's my issue here.
I would go to the language in McFarland that says you don't have to have evidence of use. What you have to show is the character of the highway as a public right-of-way. Okay. And I can cite directly to that language, but it is beyond question that 54 and 70 have established through their own existence their character as highways for public use. I live there, as does Mr. Wheeler and Ms. Watson. We see the missile trucks and the tanks and the armaments and the enormous amount of traffic that go up and down those highways every day. And there are some things that are sort of obvious, and I would urge the court to do something that my mentor taught me, to think at the speed of thought, not the speed of words, because Mr. Wheeler and Ms. Watson will come up and give you a lot of words in a minute. What we know is that people break down. We know highways need to be maintained. We know highways get covered in snow. And to deal with each of those contingencies and a million others, highways have to have rights of way. These are public highways beyond question. And they always have been since the 1930s. And so to suggest that there would be a public highway that doesn't have those spaces, I think is a ridiculous suggestion. And candidly, for R&R, to suggest that it purchased, believing that what it purchased was this, when the records show that it got that, and not to consider whether there would be rights of way appurtenant to their purchase, is also, I think, a little ridiculous. And so I'm asking you to think at the speed of reasonable, rational thought, and think about what it is that the state has to have, and what the statute gives the members of the public in 6725. A conditional title in fee to use that land for public purposes, which cannot be divested. If you get there, the rest of the questions are elementary. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Perriello. Mr. Wheeler, please enter your appearance and then you can begin.
Good morning, Chief Justice, members of the court. May it please the court, John Wheeler from Alamogordo, together with my colleague, Ms. Elizabeth Watson, on behalf of the appellant, R&R LLC, who's represented today in the courtroom by its managing member, Mr. Michael Schein. Your Honor, in New Mexico, there are three ways that the state can obtain a highway without paying for it. A dedication, where it accepts a dedication by a private party, through prescriptive use under their normal common law of prescription, or under 67-2-5. And 67-2-5 is the meat and potatoes of this case. And it says, when any state highway in the state of New Mexico is continuously used by were open for use to the public, as such, for a period of 1 year, such, with some things in the middle, such right-of-way shall be and become the property of and fee thereto shall vest in the state of New Mexico for such highway purposes. So what that does is it takes the common law of prescription and it shortens the 10-year period to 1 year. It gets rid of the adversity requirement And it it provides an easier mechanism for the state to obtain a public highway. It's a statute in derogation of common law, and it must be construed strictly. So let's take it piece by piece. Continuously used by or open for use to the public as such. What does that as such mean? It means as a state highway. And a state highway is defined in Chapter 67 as anything that's been declared by the legislature or declared by the engineer of the state highway department. So it has to be continuously used as a state highway or open for use as a state highway. And in this case, for many, many, many decades, the property in question is located behind a vertical curb, and it consists of a parking lot, a filling station, and a restaurant. And so it has not been open to the public ever as a public, as a state highway. It's been open to the public as a restaurant. It's been open to the public as a gas station, and there's a parking lot that serves the restaurant and the gas station. But it's never been open as a state highway. And that is what is instructive here. The state said that the appellant has conceded that the state has some interest in that property. That's absolutely categorically wrong. We've never conceded that. The Court of Appeals got it right when it talked about what our concession is. Our concession is that the roadway, the curb, the inlet, and the actual roadway itself belong to the state. Anything on the other side of the curb belongs to my client. This case started with the state saying that it had an express easement to the property. And it produced 791 pages of documents that it said evidenced that express easement. During the summary judgment hearing, the state conceded, well, you know, we don't really have an easement, an express easement, but we've got a prescriptive easement. And the only evidence that it provided to the court was an affidavit by Mr. Smelker and a map. The affidavit by Mr. Smelker talks to general policies and procedures and practices with respect to all highways in the state of New Mexico, without respect to this specific parcel. Mr. Smelker never once testified in his affidavit that the state used this property for any highway purpose whatsoever.
They don't have to establish title. They don't have to establish title at summary judgment. It's an issue of disputed fact.
No,
it should go to trial. They're not required at summary judgment to try their case that they acquired title through 67.25.
Your Honor, but I would disagree with the court on that.
Okay.
The burden under Rule 56E is that they come forward with some admissible evidence that creates a question of fact.
Yeah, like a map that says, and an affidavit that says, we use this highway for highway purposes, including the section we need to maintain the highway. Do you have any dispute that the roadway is owned by Department of Transportation?
No, Your Honor, and the Court of Appeals got that exactly right.
Okay.
We completely concede that the roadway is used by is the property of the state of New Mexico.
You dispute whether the portions to the side of the roadway are owned, correct?
We dispute whether the portions outside of the curb, on the other side, you know, on the other side of the curb, on the other side of the shoulder, that have always been used as a parking lot, are part of the highway.
Okay, and you're at summary judgment stage, correct?
Yes.
And so you're asserting to me they have to prove up under 56E that how they acquired basically fee title under 67.25.
Your Honor, they have to provide some admissible evidence that this was a highway at some point in time, or that it was used for highway purposes, or that it was open for use as a highway. They have to present some evidence. And dotted, as the Court of Appeals found, dotted lines on a map aren't evidence of use. At the very best, it's evidence of what the state claims. And a claim that you own a property isn't admissible evidence that you own the property. or that you have a right to the property. They have to produce something else. And they have to produce something else, as the Court of Appeals found, other than generalities that, you know, typically highways need this or highways need that or highways need a clear zone. They need to produce more than that with respect to any specific piece of property. Otherwise, the title to every single piece of property along a highway is clouded.
In your experience, if the state acquires a highway under 6725, do they file a deed?
Generally speaking, no. Then it's incumbent on them, if questioned about their ownership.
They don't, correct?
No, sir. And so in this case, the state of New Mexico produced no evidence that it ever used, submitted no admissible evidence in response to Rule 56D that it ever used the property in question for any purpose whatsoever. And, you know, under the case law governing summary judgment was proper here. Your Honor, turning to what R&R owns in this case, and that is a center point of the state's claim that R&R didn't own the full 2.016 acres. This property over the last 100 years has been owned basically by four people: R.D. Champion, the G.V. Clayton family, the Glover family, and then the Ritchies. And from the Glover family to the Ritchies, there was an error in the description, and the description, it was clearly intended to convey the whole property. The operation continued as a restaurant, gas station with the parking lot, but there was an error in the description, and that was corrected in the 2016 quiet title action. The 2016 quiet title action did not impact the state's rights in any way whatsoever. If the state had a right prior to the 2016 quiet title, it had that right after the 2016 quiet title. All the 2016 quiet title did is clear up the error in the deed out of the Glover Glover estate to the Ritchies, and so that's all that was. And my client purchased the full 2.016 acres, and later determined that there was a error in the description. So let's talk about the main thrust of counsel's argument this morning that was raised really for the first time here in oral argument, that a purchaser has a duty to go to the state highway department to see and inquire what the state claims that it owns. That's nothing that the state has argued up to this point. It's not briefed, and it's not law. It's to put a private party on duty to go knock on the state engineer or the state highway department's door and ask, hey, do you guys have a claim on this property? Because I want to see what you guys claim. That's not the law. It never has been the law. And it turns the recording statute on its head. The recording statute is the mechanism that somebody gives notice of something in the state of New Mexico. It's not an inquiry process.
But correct me if I've not been in this area for a while. These aren't recorded. The Department of Transportation does not record that deed. That's the kind of the purpose of 6725.
Your Honor, I would disagree with that. And also, this statute wasn't passed in 1979. This statute was passed in 1929.
Right.
And it's been good law in the state of New Mexico for almost 100 years now. And it says that it is that a parcel becomes that there's a fee interest arises in the state when it's continuously used by or open for use to the public as such for a period of 1 year. If the state truly believed that the parcel in question was used by or open for use to the public as a state highway for 1 year, then it was incumbent upon them to say so and to produce some evidence, admissible evidence, in response to the motion for summary judgment. And it did not do that. It produced nothing other than a map that says this is what we claim. And a claim of ownership isn't admissible evidence as to ownership. Just because somebody claims something, that's not enough under the summary judgment standard.
What do they need to show? Like, give me an example.
For example, Your Honor, if Mr. Smelker came forward with an affidavit saying, we use this property to maintain our highway for a period of more than 1 year. We parked bulldozers on the property for a period of more than 1 year. We stored highway road salts on the property for a period of 1 year. The general public, this was a very dangerous intersection, and the general public routinely used this as a clear zone, pulling off for a period of more than 1 year. And it needs to be continuous use for 1 year. This is a statute in derogation of common law, and it needs to be strictly construed. So a continuous use for a period of 1 year or more. Justice Bacon, those are the types of things that they could have, if the property had actually been used for highway purposes, those are the types of things that they could have come forward with. And they didn't. They didn't come forward with, at the summary judgment stage, with an allegation or admissible evidence that they even stepped foot on this property for highway purposes.
So they produced maps showing a claim that they had this use or they had this easement.
Yes, sir.
But that didn't establish the use.
That does not establish the use. That just establishes the claim, Your Honor.
And the affidavit did not establish use.
Pardon?
And the affidavit.
No, sir. The affidavit does not establish use either. The affidavit just says, generally speaking, for highway purposes, you need a clear zone. You need to be able to maintain it. It doesn't speak with particularity to the specific
so
property.
So it's an expression of desire.
Yeah, yes, ma'am. Expression of desire.
So let me ask you about the affidavit. In paragraph 17, it says NMDOT has maintained the public right-of-way in question at the property in dispute, as supported by regularly kept maintenance business records in the district office for more than 1 year. Were those maintenance records ever produced to the court?
No, ma'am, they were never produced to the court. And under 65E as well, rules 65E states specifically, I'm sorry, 56, I keep saying 65, rule 56, when a sworn or certified copies of all papers or parts thereof referred to in an affidavit shall be attached thereto or served therewith. So simply referring to maintenance records without attaching the records to the summary judgment motion is not sufficient.
But those are the kind of records that you would produce if you wanted to show.
Yes, ma'am.
Continually using, or it was open for use by the public.
Yes, Your Honor, and the state knew that, and that's why they referred to them in the affidavit. But they were never produced, and they weren't attached at any point, in discovery or otherwise, and they were never attached to the affidavit as required in Rule 56E. And so they didn't produce the type of evidence that would establish use. And Your Honor, the other thing that's fluid about the state's claim here is when they claim this year of continuous use occurred. This property was initially, or the highway. Highway 5470 was initially conveyed to the state by G.B. Clayton in 1930. It was a dedication, the state accepted, and that's when the highway started, was in 1930. Then in 1960, the state widened Highway 54 and 70 by 10 feet, and there was a whole series of condemnation actions in 1960. So they did it the right way in 1960. They wanted to widen the road, they condemned it, and they paid for it, and they did it the right way. Well, Council has been all over the board on when this 1 year of use actually occurred. This morning, Mr. Carrillo said that it occurred in 1955. That's the first time we've heard that number. At various points, they argued that it was pre-1960, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense given the condemnation action. If they already had that use of the property at that point, why would they condemn an additional 10 feet? And then he's argued that it's occurred post-1960. He's argued that it's in the Court of Appeals brief that it occurred post-1978, because for some reason that the state has argued on a number of occasions that the statute was passed in 1978. And then he's argued that it has occurred post-1979. The state can't tell you what the 1 year period of use or the 1 year that it was open to use as a state highway was. They can't tell you that. They're all over the board. It happened sometime. We don't have any specifics to point to where we actually used it. We don't know when we used it, but we used it, and we'd like a trial on the matter, please, so we can come forward with this. And that's not appropriate. This is a case where it and then the state this morning also said that, well, the purchaser found this this claim. The purchaser in this case, Maverick, asked the state department or the highway department of transportation what asked about the property in terms of ingress and egress and stuff, and the department of transportation responded, well, we own 90% of that property anyway. And Justice Thompson, that's exactly almost on all fours with your opinion in City of Albuquerque with SMP Properties, where they actively interfered with a sale to a third party, and it created a damaging under Article 2, Section 20. It wasn't that a reasonable person would have stumbled across his claim. It was that the purchaser asked the state, and the state said, we own 90% of this property, which is an interesting number too, because even if you take the state on, well, they only owned half of it, their argument this morning, it's still not owning 90% of the property. So we think that the Court of Appeals got this exactly right when it said that the state produced no admissible evidence whatsoever that the property was ever used by the state as a state highway or open for use to the public as a state highway. Any interest created by 67-2-5 arose through use, is measured by use, and ends when use ends. And there's no, you don't get to the measuring point if you can't establish that the use was ever created.
Because otherwise we just have a de facto broadening of any state highway in every instance to say, well, we want it to be, we want the curtilage to be X distance wide, kind of in every instance, and people are left out there measuring and determining where that easement would be.
Justice Bacon, that's exactly right, and that's our point. And our point even goes slightly beyond that, because if you read the argument carefully, they talk about changing standards. So if the NHTSA
says 200 feet.
200 feet, and then they come back and they say, well, really it needs to be 220. The state argues, and then that 220 goes on to a property.
And it would just be automatic, regardless of whether it's open to the public and being used.
That's right. That's exactly what the state's argument is.
It's even simpler than that. All they have to do is write a map.
That's right, and that's what they did here.
That's all they have to do.
That's right. That's all they did here.
And you got to go find it.
And you've got to go find it. That's right. With that, Chief Justice and members of the court, I'd stand for any further questions, but we would ask the court to affirm in whole the Court of Appeals and the District Court.
Thank you, Mr. Wheeler.
Thank you.
Mr. Carrillo, you have 8 minutes.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I went back because I was very concerned about your first question and went back to the Smelker affidavit maps. And I'm not certain what the court is looking at, but I did find a signature on the last page of the Smelker affidavit maps. It's under the survey notes on the right-hand side. There's an attestation with an engineer's seal on the far right. So this was not a blank document that was submitted in support of the Smelker affidavit. My second point, and I think this is an important point because it goes back to the theme of what is it that the plaintiff is really doing here, is to look at Exhibit 40 at page 11. Again, this is an exhibit submitted by the opposing party. And if you were to compare the legal description in Exhibit 40, page 11, to the court's order on summary judgment, you will find that the following phrase is left out of the court's order. The phrase appears at the end of the legal description, subject to any rights of way or other easements as granted or reserved by instruments of record or as now existing on said track. This is in the record. It was the opposing party's exhibit, but when the opposing party submitted amended findings of fact and conclusions of law to the court, that was left out. And that language, subject to other existing claims, is what concerns the state.
Look, so what does that mean? What big sword do you think that language provides?
I think it means subject to 67-2-5.
Which still requires the state to show continuous use and open to the use of the public. I mean, it just takes us right back to that language.
Let me take you then to another exhibit by the plaintiff, because I think that addresses that issue. In the reply brief at page 12, we've referred the court.
Which reply brief? Below or here?
I apologize. The reply brief here.
Okay. Thank you.
In the reply brief here, we have advised the court that under New Mexico law, recorded instruments impart constructive notice to all subsequent purchasers, and 14-9-2 provides in mandatory terms, such records shall be noticed to all the world of the existence and contents of the instruments, and so forth and so on. Go to plaintiff's trial exhibit number 28.
We're talking about summary judgment. What did your client proffer at the time of summary judgment? That's the point in time.
My client proffered at the time of summary judgment the map with the signature from the surveyor.
That's all you got.
On the bat, indicating and the testimony of the use that was continuous by the state at the time. And I believe that under McFarland and that discussion about the character of the public use, that is adequate to create a disputed issue of material fact for trial. What's so frustrating about this case for the state is that once we submitted enough evidence to get to a disputed issue of material fact, the district court switched its focus and went into a pure prescriptive easement analysis and did not allow us to present the remainder of the testimony. Going back to Adrian Montoya's testimony on the second day of trial, she was about to testify as to the full title report and everything that was in there, but Mr. Wheeler objected and said, Your Honor, you've already ruled on a prescriptive easement basis, so you don't have to hear anything, even if it's under 67-2-5, and it's not a prescriptive easement basis. So the court foreclosed further discussion of material facts in the record. What's fascinating about trial exhibit number 28 is that it is an abstract of title prepared by the plaintiff that shows that the plaintiff only bought 0.511 acres, more or less. And again, the reference is to page 12, where there's an indication of where this appears in the record proper. So what does that mean? What's the big sword there? The big sword there is, if what you bought is this, and you're claiming this, but your own exhibits say, well, in the abstract of title, it says you bought this, then how can you make a claim now for anything beyond the little triangle? Well, they make the claim anyway, and they go to another one of their exhibits, exhibit number 40, and say, see, we want to sell all of this, and here's its value. But exhibit 40 says, hang on, there's a question about that. What you really bought was this, and anything else is purely hypothetical in nature.
That doesn't mean the highway owns the prescriptive easement under 67-2-5. It doesn't mean that.
It's not a prescriptive easement, well, Justice Beadle.
It doesn't mean you own that right away under 67-2-5 by virtue of use of that property.
The only way you can get there based on the record, and I appreciate that that's exactly what the plaintiff is saying, the only way you can get there is to assume that we had to have testimony that it was used on this day, at this time, for this amount, or for this year, and that is not what is suggested in the
case. I understand that, but I just want to make sure that whether, and I don't know if your triangles are proportional or not.
Right.
Or, you know.
Well, it's supposed to be a quarter and a whole.
Okay, I got
so
you.
So that's what the proportionality
is. You would agree, Mr. Carrillo, that you have to have more than just reuse the property. You might not have to say this time, this day, this hour, but you have to explain when and how it was used. And in the affidavit, it just says that NMDOT has maintained the public right-of-way in question at the property in dispute, as supported by the regularly kept maintenance business records, which are not provided. So it could have been once.
It could have been once. But it's not required because of the public nature and the public character of the road. Here's something really fun to look at, and I would ask for leave to supplement the record. And I would actually ask that the record be supplemented by Mr. Wheeler. These photographs in Exhibit 40 show the signage placed by the state on top of this property.
Why didn't you produce that as part of your motion for summary judgment?
I didn't have Exhibit 40 at the time of the summary judgment.
Why not? You drove by there and you saw signs?
I didn't have this because this is the plaintiff's record.
Okay. But you had the ability to have your expert do the same thing.
I did, and the motion for summary judgment was submitted substantially early in the case, far in advance of the trial.
But these are so open and obvious. The signs.
I understand the frustration completely because I parked my pickup truck under one of these signs.
This was in NMDOT's control. You could have done that and didn't. And that's what's frustrating, I think, to us.
I attempted to get all of this in the record with the district judge. She made an early ruling on summary judgment on prescriptive easement grounds, and the record will reflect that then she wouldn't hear anything from the rest of us on any other subject.
Did you file a motion for reconsideration?
I did, yes, ma'am.
And what happened with, was it just
It was denied. Okay. Pre-trial motion for reconsideration, post-trial motion for reconsideration, amended finding facts and conclusions of law, all of them articulating everything that you just asked me to articulate. All of that is in the record, and the district judge
turned away. Did you request time to get additional discovery before the motion for summary judgment ruling was made?
I did. In fact, on the morning of the trial, I said, please don't go forward.
Not trial.
In the 5 months between the filing of the motion and the entry of the order, did that happen?
Did I ask for additional time?
Did you take any steps to get additional time or explain why you needed, why you couldn't go get pictures of the signs in that time frame?
What I did in that 5 months was prepare the motion for reconsideration, saying that we've got a mistake here and we've got a problem. And I read the exhibits from the other party. They're exhibits that say, I only bought the little triangle, I didn't buy the big triangle. So I don't frankly understand why we're here on an argument that we've somehow taken the big triangle away from them. They never had it. It was ours from the beginning, according to their own exhibits. If we examine the two that are in the record, they're arguing for something that they never owned. So they've expanded the purchase of 25% into the purchase of 100%, and now have the temerity to stand in front of this court and say, you took that 75% away from us, and we didn't get a sale. Which is a whole other issue on causation because Maverick discovered this problem. Maverick walked away on their own.
Mr. Cadillo, your time is up unless there are other
Thank
questions
you, Chief Justice.
From the panel. Thank you.
I appreciate the court's time.
I want to thank you both for your briefing. It was very helpful as well as your arguments. The court is going to take this case under advisement. It's deemed submitted as of today, and we will get you a decision as soon as we're able. Court's in recess.
Attend the court, please.